The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 3 Podcast.
Back, and it's great to welcome all of you back to the show, and we bring back a good friend of ours we talked to recently, but we wanted a little more time with Jim Cabal, who is, of course, the founder of Influencer, and there's a lot happening right now out there in the marketplace, and not only that, speaking of influencers, Jim recently has been mentioned as one of the most important people in the industry, both by ESPN and Sports Illustrated, ahead of some of the more familiar names. Jim, I'm not trying to blow your level of influence up, but you're doing quite well in the college athletic space.
I mean, Paul, it's surreal to see my name on those lists, and I appreciate you referencing them. But ultimately, man, you know, it's just such a crazy time with NIL. I think anything tied to it that's making an impact is headlining right now. It's just such a, as you've been talking about every time on your show, transcended part of college football.
On one of those lists, our guest here was ranked as more important and more significant in the space than even Jimmy Sexton, which I am told Jimmy Sexton will never get over that. Jim, there's so many things out there, but I want to start with Southern Cal because we're seeing some really weird things out there. They have the collective, then they have another one, and it seems, you follow this pretty closely, that the school was none too thrilled about the second one. What's going on?
Well, I think whether it's the Southern Cal example or a lot of the other schools who've had collectives emerge, schools have not been very proactive on being a buffer between these collectives and their student athletes. We saw Lane Kiffin talk about this at SEC Media Days recently, where he said, hey, all these donors and collectives are interfacing directly with my players. We haven't even started camp yet. You don't even know who I'm going to play. And so you're offering deals, not really understanding that we still have a season to play. And I think you're going to see schools start to speak up like Southern Cal has, start to create systems that are a buffer between the student athlete and some of these different collectives. Not because collectives are a bad thing, but if they're done on an island without the school involved, they might not know what they're doing. They could get themselves and the school and the athlete in some trouble.
And Jim, I know you're trying to work on the right side of the street, but you hear more than anyone probably in terms of what's happening on the other side. And I think there's just this perception among those people that we talk to every day, fans, that this is just out and out bidding. And we had Mac Brown on 2 hours ago, and he said it, at some places it's an absolute bid. Nothing can be done immediately, but in the interim, what if anything can be done to at least ameliorate the situation?
Well, there's a few things. Number one, we've been saying we need regulatory uniformity for a while now, and I think a lot of people are thinking that that comes from the federal government, and that is not realistic, at least not anytime soon. We've got a lot of big things going on in the world right now. It's not high on the list. There's also a ton of different bills from senators and congressmen and women and both parties that are pretty wide, when it comes to the differences between what they're proposing. And so we need, I think, conferences to step up and create regulatory uniformity across their league. They need to get the states of the schools in their league on the same page so we have uniformity there. Because it is true that, you know, ultimately NIL and the value of an athlete is being determined by three things. Their performance, so what's their five-star recruiting rating, stats on the field, if they played college and they're in the portal, where are their stats at their college, at what school they play. Influence, how many followers do they have on social, how often do they post, how much engagement do they get. And then exposure, which is what school do they go to and how big of a stage are they on. And I think what you're seeing is student-athletes coming from the portal are getting really big NIL deals because they're proven on the field. And a lot of people want them to come to whatever school they're transferring to because they know they can make a difference. Whereas high school athletes, unless they're a five-star, are pretty unproven. And this whole thing is becoming a bidding war in a lot of cases. And it's just a reality that's part of it right now.
Jim, I saw the story today with Miles Brennan at LSU leaving. He had deals. What happens when a player has deals and then leaves the school or goes somewhere else?
Well, it depends on what's in the contract, right? But ultimately, you can't tie an NIL deal to their position, their playing time, their stats. Then it would actually be pay for play, to your point earlier. But I think as long as the contract doesn't stipulate that he has to hold a spot on the team, he's still able to fulfill those contracts. We saw Spencer Rattler do some big deals last year with car dealerships in Norman, and then he ended up losing his starting spot. And a lot of people said, well, that poor dealership, they missed out on what they could have gotten from Rattler if he started all year. I don't agree. Rattler still had a ton of influence in the market, still has a big following on social. He fulfilled what he was promised to fulfill in his contract, and now he'll go to South Carolina. And it's just part of it. There is a risk for the business, too, because the name, image, and likeness could not only be of a player that leaves, but we've seen players have character issues and other issues that you're now tying yourself as a company to. So what happens is just part of it.
Jim, I know you've worked with a lot of universities. We had you on here with the athletic director at Ole Miss one day. You were on here with Levis last week or the week before. How are the universities dealing with this? And I know there are all kinds of stipulations, but on a day-in, day-out basis, what is happening on campuses in relation to NIL?
Well, at the beginning, schools were super like, we can't be involved. The state law says we can't be involved. Our policy says we can't be involved. We just want to make sure that athletes are reporting their transactions. And then 6 months in, we started to see collectives emerge in a lot of different ways that businesses, collectives, donors, et cetera, were interfacing directly with the athletes. And schools started to say, okay, we got to get a little more involved. And I think now the schools that are having the most success with NIL are hiring NIL roles on staff. They're bringing in outside firms to staff people on campus to help with deal making for athletes, questions athletes have about contracts, help athletes fulfill the deal they've signed on to do, help athletes manage their financials, all that stuff. I mean, think about it. And athletes used to go into the school for everything. When they're injured, there's a team doctor, there's a trainer. When they have trouble in school, there's a tutor, there's an academic advisor. They need help with this too. And putting staff either employees of the campus or a contracted out staff member from another organization on the campus creates that buffer to protect the athlete from some of the things we've seen kind of take NIL in an unfortunate direction.
In the business world, we always hear about return on investment. Do you have any idea how that applies to what we're seeing in the college space?
Well, it depends which NIL you're talking about. You know, if it's the NIL that we seen at the pro level and with celebrities for years, I think the ROI is going to be pretty clear when you have an athlete promote your business and you see how many followers they reach, you see how many of those followers took action on the call to action in their post or their video, right? You can really calculate that. This other NIL that's tied more to performance and is funded by collectives who are getting money from boosters and those passionate around the program to do a deal for an athlete to make an appearance at a dinner. Well, now, when the athlete gets on the field, it's going to be interesting, right? I mean, let's just look at the SEC. If 14 schools raise $10 million each for their collective, and those 14 collectives, $140 million, now start funding player deals for appearances and other types of NIL value exchanges, how many teams make the SEC football championship game? Two. So how do those other 12 schools of donors and collectives feel based on how those players played? And, you know, I think that's what's going to even itself out as we get into year two and year three. The market's going to settle, Paul, regardless of what happens with regulations. Regulations should only help it settle more.
Jim Caval with us. Jim, you mentioned a number there, and I realize you're just throwing something up in the air, but is there a way to calculate what various schools are doing right now? How much, how much of that information is known? And if so, what can you share with us?
It's not public information, and it's not even like a FOIA situation where, like, you know, our contract with the school, that's how we get paid. You could go FOIA that at a public school. You can't really, you know, this is FERPA protected for the athletes, so they really own this data. The school co-owns it to a certain extent because compliance requires every transaction to be disclosed to ensure they're within the rules. But as far as what I can talk about and not talk about, it's really not something that I can speak to beyond what's been publicized by the school or the athlete in press.
I bring this next question up because, again, one of our guests today, I think it was Mac Brown, talked about one reason he thinks that you're seeing this explosion of expansion for the TV money is that universities are struggling more now in raising conventional funds because so much money is being put in this space. And it's not the kind of money you end up seeing a building in a couple of years. It's given to a player. So can you address that part of it, which seems like a lot of dead money here?
I think that goes back to my SEC hypothetical just now of those 12 schools whose donors now gave towards something that, you know, didn't pan out. And maybe after the first two teams that make the championship, four other teams have a good season and make a bowl game. But there's going to be donors that don't feel like they got what they could have got if they did a scholarship fund after their name or built a building. And I think over time, you're going to see this really figure itself out because of what you just brought up.
Well, you would hope so, but in the interim, not that any of this is my responsibility, but you know, there has fundraising people on college campuses right now must be pulling their hair out.
It's not as much cannibalism as you would think.
Really,
at least from the folks I talk to, it hasn't been a situation where they're not building a building or a fund for a capital campaign is not being met. I haven't heard that story yet. It's always been a fear, whether it's businesses who advertise with the school spending money with a student athlete instead, or now donors who usually donate toward a school doing a collective donation instead with the athlete. I haven't heard, we didn't make our number. I haven't heard that yet.
I mean, I was with some boosters at some point recently and they seemed fatigued. Because there's so many different places you have to give now. You know, schools are all building new facilities, basketball arenas, wherever. You see this all the time, and I know I'm just throwing speculative questions up, but you know, with attendance being somewhat up in the air, and how many a lot of people aging out of wanting to be at the games, and television being what it is, which makes it much easier. It just seems like there are some real concerns down the road for college athletics.
I think those are valid concerns. And I think that if this continues the way it's going, I think you're going to even see media revenue sharing on the table for student athletes. And I mean, listen, those models are all being ran in college athletic departments right now, as far as what it looks like to have this new revenue model of sharing money with student athletes. And, you know, NIL is just really a beginning of all this. And where it settles, where it ends up, a lot of that has to do with how much control the powers that be take in creating regulations that have some uniformity to them. If we don't do that, at least across a conference, it's hard to see where this is going to end up and what it looks like for some schools and some leagues versus others.
Jim, we heard it from a few players at Penn State recently. They want more. You know these players. You deal with them every day. I know it's hard to put a date on this transaction here, but when are we going to see that shift? And it's going to be a dramatic shift when players start getting a share of the revenues or the TV money or whatever it is.
Well, first of all, it has to be figured out, not just what it looks like sharing the revenue and how much certain players from certain teams get, but also, are they employees or not? And see, here's the thing. Right now, we really are in the golden era for student athletes. Think about it. You get a check for cost of attendance. You get a check for educator-related benefits if you do well in the classroom. You get unlimited gear. You have multiple strength trainers and chefs, everything you can, free tuition. And you can be a free agent every year and go into the transfer portal, and you have NIL. So, and everything I said, by the way, except NIL, is tax-free. And so right now is the golden era. If student athletes become employees, tuition may not be free. You might only get one pair of cleats and you're paying for every extra pair. We'll give you one strength trainer. You're going to share the cost for the other three strength trainers and your chef. All these things that student athletes have gotten used to may become something that they're now paying for out of their employment. And I fear that that might not be great for the broad sample of student athletes. It might be good for a couple or small percentage, but not for everyone. So really right now is the best time for student athletes in history.
What an incredible conversation. I mean, it's just, every time we talk, it becomes even more mind-boggling to think about where we are, where we've been, and where we're going. Jim, thank you so much for your time.
Thanks for having me, Paul. Next time you're in Birmingham, hit me up.
I will. Can't wait. Jim Cavalli joining us from Influencer, about as influential as anybody in the country in that space. We'll take a short break. Get your reaction right after this.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%. Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand-name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at Hims.com/Paul. That's Hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. Hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
And we got talking season beginning tonight with Marty and McGee. The East first, the West next. Check it out. JK is up next.
Feinbaum, what's happening?
Hey, how are you?
JK. I can't complain. Hey, Paul, before I start, let me give a shout-out to Big Daddy, Dandy Dave Tannery, the only guy in Bessemer, Alabama, to roll three perfect 300 bowling games in Bessemer. And a shout-out to all the poker players down at the Green Top. But check this out, Paul. I'm going to give you two upsets week one, and it's going to be Georgia. And the other one's going to be Florida. Two SEC upsets week one. Write it down. Take it to the bank.
So Florida's beating Utah. That's the upset?
No.
Oh.
Florida's going to get upset. I know they're the underdog, but, you know, y'all say the SEC and all that big talk, they're going down week one in the swamp.
Okay. I'll put that down on my best bets list.
Put that down. That's a guarantee.
Okay.
You heard it first. All right, buddy. Have a good one. I'll holler at you later on in the week.
Thank you very much. I'm not sure that's really a big upset, but I'm not picking games like JK. Let's move along and check out Andrew, who is calling. Hey, Andrew.
Hey, how you doing?
Andrew, we are doing well. Thank you.
All right. So my question is even though Billy Napier, I'm from Florida, I'm a big Florida Gator fan, how do you compare him to Dan Mullen over the last few years? Even though he was in Louisiana, how do you think Billy Napier will do in Florida this year?
Well, I think overall, I think Billy Napier's a better coach than Dan Mullen. Dan Mullen was a phenomenal offensive play caller, but I think he had serious shortcomings as a head coach. He was too emotional. He was too arrogant. And I think Billy Napier is a calm, cool guy who I think has a great pedigree, and it's just now a matter of Florida not getting in its own way. Thank you for the call. Bird is up next in Georgia. Hey, Bird.
Oh, how you doing, Bo?
Bird, we're doing well. Thank you.
Hey, listen, man. I got two things I have to get off my chest. Last week, Roman was on, and I think he was on the SEC Network, and he was talking Tennessee beating Georgia at Georgia.
Right.
And I'm just trying to figure out, Paul, what am I not seeing? What am I missing? I mean, you know, with us winning the national championship last year, it's like everybody wants to see us lose now. And it doesn't matter to who. My second question was, for those Kentucky fans, I just want to let the Kentucky fans know, and you heard this from Bird, the landscaper in Buford, Georgia, be careful what you ask for. We saw it with Tennessee, with Farmer. Once they got Farmer out of there, you never heard from Tennessee again. Calipari is Kentucky. Don't forget that, Kentucky fans. See, they've won so much, Paul. They've won so much in basketball. And they're overlooking what Calipari has done since he's been there. Kentucky is never going to be a football school. I'm sorry. Every year you guys puff them up to beat somebody, and they never do it. They're not a football school. I am sorry. I grew up in Georgia, I've always been a Bulls fan, and there's no shot to my Hawks. And I've always, when it was time to watch college basketball, I didn't turn on the Georgia. I turned on Kentucky basketball because it's a basketball school, Paul. Thank you for taking my call. Have a great one.
Thank you very much. Handsome Joe is up next.
Roll Tide, roll, Paul Feinbaum. And you know what? Kentucky used to be a basketball school. They are a football school now. And Paul, this is kind of unprecedented. Have you got coaches? You know, Mark Stoops, I mean, I like Mark Stoops, but it's Calipari is the one that's throwing this out there because he's trying to throw any neglect off because Kentucky is subpar. They ain't been good in years, and they're not, they wasn't good. They flip-flopped this past year. And quite frankly, Auburn, Arkansas, is both better than them. You know, but their football program is better than their basketball team. But there's two more things I want to mention. Hey, I said this last Monday when I called in. Kevin Harvick got two races in a row. He won yesterday at Richmond.
Did he really?
And
then, did you know that?
And
Kevin Harvick has won two. That's after not having won for 65 races.
Right, 65 races, and then they just went back to back. And I don't know if you heard his thing. And which, by the way, he did. I did chat with him this. You know, well, I didn't say chat. He just pretty much thanked me for being a fan this morning.
How did hold on. Where did he thank you for being a fan?
He just sent me a message. Paul, he listens to this show.
Kevin Harvick doesn't know this show from Howard Stern.
He loves football, Paul. He loves football. He does. He's not
Kevin
necessarily
Harvick?
An SEC fan or Alabama fan, but yeah, he does listen to this show.
Kevin Harvick, the country singer?
No.
NASCAR
driver. Hey, he does. Hey, you got fans. You got congressmen that listen to this show. I mean, you got fans all over the world that listen to this show. But I've been a Kevin Harvick fan for a while, and he's actually sent me a couple of things in the mail, you know, through the past few years.
Well, but Kevin Harvick's not a Southerner.
No, he's actually from California.
Yeah. So what does he know about football?
Well, I mean, he's looking from afar, I guess.
Okay, so listen, would you? I'd love to meet Kevin. You want to meet Kevin Harvick?
Sure.
Yeah, can you introduce us one day, Joe?
Yeah, I'll tell him to come by this weekend.
Okay.
Now,
Joe, you know,
I don't know him
Joe,
that
you know,
well,
back
Paul.
in the day, I covered NASCAR.
I know it. I know it. I mean, don't get me wrong. I don't know Kevin that. You know, it ain't like we message each other
Here's the deal, because if you knew him, considering he's won 2 weeks in a row, I was going to ask him for $100.
Well, you know what? That's what I should have said this morning. I should have asked for, you
I mean,
know,
the guy's won something. Two NASCAR races in a row. The guy's swimming in dollar bills right now.
That's right.
I mean, I bought his hats. I bought his T-shirts. I mean, he could at least throw me a couple of bucks back.
So, okay, Joe, so give me your NASCAR history for a second. I mean, you were you always a Kevin Harvick fan?
I was a Dale Earnhardt. I was
Richard. You were Richard a Dale Petty Earnhardt. Fan. Now, I never saw that one coming. The Intimidator.
But listen to this. Back in 2007, I was actually in the newspaper every week in the Times Daily in Florence, Alabama. I was one of three panelists that answered NASCAR questions each week. And I got to go to a few races that year. Including
now,
the last.
That's amazing. Now, do you know that you said Dale Jr. or Dale Sr.?
Dale Sr. I actually met Dale Jr. Yeah. The junior. Sure. I never met Dale Jr.
You can meet him at a Walmart on Saturday. Now, do you know, I don't know if I've told this story. One day, many years ago, obviously a long time ago because Dale's been gone, but Dale Sr., about 2 years before he died, was in town. He was at Talladega, and he came into Birmingham, and he came by our radio station and spent about an hour with us. And I will tell you, Joe, one of the coolest I had interviewed him in groups. So I'd never been around him personally. He came up, kicked his feet up with those boots, and one of the cooler guys I've met in the industry.
That's got to be awesome right there, Paul. I've actually met and talked to Dale Jr. And, hey, it wouldn't surprise me Dale Jr. listens to your show.
Nah, well, if you just heard what I said, he's probably not listening anymore. I was kidding, Jr. I didn't mean anything. But Dale Jr. was really, and I met all those guys in the 80s when I covered NASCAR. And he's one of the most low-key, unassuming major celebrities, and I'm talking about mega celebrities I've ever met.
Hey, he's old school, Paul. He raced when you had to win a race to have supper on the table. I mean, he was driven. I mean, he was. And, you know, Dale Jr., he was born on third base, like
Mark Stoops said the other day, but I knew that whole Alabama gang. I used to go out to BIR on Friday night. I mean, I did it all, not for long, but I did it.
Alabama gang kicked butt. I mean, they did. Allison, Bobby, Davey. Davey may have been the best.
But he may have been the best of the group.
I think he was, Paul. I cried the day he died. I did.
I said this at the time, Joe, when Davey died, I wrote this in a newspaper article. I was still writing back then. I wrote it was the saddest day in Alabama since Bear Bryant died. I mean, that's how big a deal that thing was.
It was. You're absolutely correct, Paul. It was.
Joe, I hate to run. We're up against a break, but NASCAR Live continues right after this.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
And we're back, and Rucker is in Georgia. Hello, Rucker.
Hey, Paul. How you doing, man?
Rucker, we're doing great.
Hey, great show. Listen, I was sitting around yesterday listening to Lynyrd Skynyrd. And the song reminded me of one of your callers. So I compiled a little list of people that are callers of this show and also college football, and I was going to go with real quick with you. Number one, give me
Call
three
me the
steps.
Breeze, okay. I'm sorry.
Give
go
me
ahead.
Three steps. Give me three steps. Larry from Shelby.
Larry from Shelby. That's a good one.
Let me tell you something, Jack. Number two, Call Me the Breeze. It's got to be Darryl from Columbia, from Columbus. Paul, let me tell you, Paul. Nick Saban's not the best coach. Best coach is Kirby Smart. Number three, what's your name? Got to be I, man. He only got one letter in his first name. Number four, Freebird. Got to be AC. Got to be AC because he gets that
Freebird.
He gets that metal bird, that metal finger. Number five, Sweet Home Alabama, Jerome. Let me tell you something, Feinbaum. You hear me, Feinbaum? Number six, Give Me Back My Bullets. Got to be Legend.
Give Me Back My Bullets.
Black Hat Society.
I'm waiting for Saturday Night Special here, guys.
Woo! Saturday Night Special. Nick Saban.
Ooh, it's another Saturday Night Special.
Oh, that's all I got. I just wanted to thank you for your show, man.
Well, I tell you what, on behalf of Ronnie and the family, we thank you for remembering us.
See you, Paul.
Wow. Mentioned Skinner.
Just a simple man.
Oh, that's a good song too. We could do all afternoon here with Skinner songs. Let's save it for when we go down to Jacksonville because nobody else will be talking to us that day. We'll have to get. Trey is up next. Hello, Trey.
Paul and Jim from Tuscaloosa would be that smell. Ooh, that smell. That's a good one for him. What do you think about that one, Paul?
I like that one.
You know, we're getting close, Paul, when that meaningless top 25 comes out and everybody's all upset about something that doesn't have anything to do with the college football playoffs. It kind of cracks me up. But, Paul, I got some response to J.K. I got a bet for J.K. I bet he don't even get to the ACC championship. He will not finish 8-4. They will not get into the bowl New Year's 6. And, Paul, they won't even end up ranked in the top 25. Now, I want J.K. to call back and respond tomorrow and talk about Miami. He's a Miami fan. He's not an SEC fan, or he's not an Alabama fan, or he's an undercover Alabama SEC fan pretending to be a Miami fan. But, Paul, first weekend, week one, who do you think has a better chance of being upset, Georgia or Ohio State? Because I was quite surprised that Notre Dame come out in this meanest poll, number 5. And I'll hang up and listen, and thank you for taking my call, and give Jamari a big shout-out. He does a great job.
Yeah, I don't think that it will happen, but I think Georgia probably has a slightly better chance because it's a neutral site game, even though it's in Atlanta, but they did lose there last year, and I think Ohio State is going to put one on Notre Dame. I don't think that's a fair fight. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. Let's check out Stoney in Kentucky. Hello, Stoney.
Hey there. Hey there, Paul. How y'all doing today?
Hey there.
Yeah, man. I listen to your callers on there and everything. Talk about this SEC and stuff. But my thing is, some folks, man, they need to quit being hard on Coach Cal, man. I mean, I love Mark Stoops, and I love Coach Cal, and Mitch Barnhart is a well-respected AD. But, folks, man, it's blowing this out of proportion. We all know we've been a basketball school with all the national championships that we won, but we also a football school and a track school and a volleyball school. So, you know, I mean, Coach Cal didn't mean nothing derogatory about it, but folks just took it and ran with it. And got the whole damn state going crazy right now.
You're right about that,
yeah,
Stoney.
Uproar. It's bad. It's not just bad time about the Bahama, even though they went out there and played good with all the new recruits that he got and stuff like that. But yet, look what he just did before they went, when they have people out in eastern Kentucky with this here tornadoes and floods and stuff. Those are the things they didn't
even
focus on.
Well, in one respect, Stoney, I think what Cal managed to do is get everybody's mind off the tragedy and arguing about it. You're right. It doesn't amount to much, but it does amount to a lot if you're Mark Stoops. And once again, after all the things you've done, you get slighted. And, whose fault is it? Mark Stoops could have said nothing, and this thing would have been a blip on the radar screen, but he decided, you know what, it's time for me to plant my flag. And I think sometimes in life, you have to man up for that moment. Thank you for the call. I mean, the easiest thing in the world is to recite Calipari's resume. That takes no skill at all. It takes a little more skill to be objective about the situation up there. Bob is in West Virginia. Hello, Bob.
Hey, Paul, I'm a first-time caller, but I watch your show all the time.
Thank you.
What I'm calling about, you're welcome. What I'm calling about is the big schools in these big major conferences are really going to probably dominate this NIL thing, in my opinion. I'm a Notre Dame fan, but what I am calling about is your schools like Indiana, Purdue, your Vanderbilt, Missouri, say, Boston College, Virginia, Washington State, Oregon State, schools like that, and conferences like that, West Virginia, Kansas, Kansas State, and your American Athletic and your Conference USA and stuff. Just going out and going on our own, saying, here's what we're going to offer. We're going to offer four-year scholarships. We'll scrape up as much NIL money as we can get you to help you out. And doing their own little, like, six or seven conferences across the country. Your kids that are going to be on your punt teams and kickoff teams, your third and fourth-string quarterbacks at these major schools can go and start at these smaller schools and have your own little six or seven conferences across the country and have a 16-team playoff, try to get like TNT or TBS, stuff like that, to throw a little bit of money at them and just go off on their own and let these big schools battle them up. They still need guys to run down on kickoffs and punts, and these kids could be starting at these smaller schools and play. And that's just my opinion on a lot of this pay-for-play in the NCAA.
Well, Bob, thank you. You've raised a really good question and probably a realistic situation. We're up against a break. Let's take that now. We still have a few more guests to go and more time for your phone calls at 855-242-7285.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
And we are back, and let's check in with Ben, who is up next in Georgia. Hey, Ben.
Hey, Mr. Paul. How you doing?
We are doing great. Thank you.
Stetson Bennett, second highest QBR in the SEC last year, has a good mid-range, good downfield ball, has good field awareness, good poise. All I continue to read about. Anywhere I read about Stetson is how he won't place in the draft, how he won't produce this year. And it just gets tiring. It gets tiring as a Bulldog fan to continue to see over and over. I'm from Warner Robins, where Jake Fromm is from, and seeing how Stet has handled the pressure with JT, and he's gone through a championship now, and he's just a leader on the field. It gets tiring to see, but what are your thoughts on him quieting the critics this year?
Well, he can do it, but I'm being as objective as I can be and agree with what you said, but I think he is vulnerable to criticism. I think there is a group of people out there, as you know, the second he has an average game and a close call, they will be all over the coaching staff to put somebody else in.
Where does that stigma come from? Does that come from alumni? Does it come from boosters?
I just think it comes from a couple of things. He played brilliantly down the stretch in the championship game. That's a fact. But
played good again.
But there were other moments, I think, that brought out the critics. And I think the fact that the defense was, you know, so good that – and. I can't quite explain the public, but it's just – and I won't use the cliche that the backup's always more popular. That's a ridiculously old and hackneyed cliche. But there's just a feeling that he, in spite of everything you've said, doesn't measure up to the elite quarterbacks.
This is crazy to me. I mean, Russell Wilson is a 5'10" quarterback in the NFL. You know, they were fighting Kenny Pickett from Pitt on his hand size. It's like, can people not develop to a level to where they become a pro? Are they just given a stigma as they walk on campus as he did? And I mean, his whole,
you know, though, but I think Ben, that's applicable to so many walks of life, where no matter what you do, no matter how you do it, there's a cemented perception of who you are and what you do. Hey, thank you for the call. It's a really good question. Let's talk to Quentin next in Georgia. Good afternoon.
Hey, Mr. Feinbaum, how you doing?
I am well, thank you.
Got a question for you. Give me your honest opinion of what Georgia football will look like this year.
I think my honest opinion is very good, but not good enough.
Not good enough as far as what? National championship?
SEC or national championship.
Really?
I don't say this facetiously, but did I say something that was shocking?
Not shocking. I ain't gonna call it shocking,
okay.
But I mean, I don't look for a champ to repeat. But you're not giving us a chance to get out of the SEC, you say?
Now, Quentin, I would, if you said to me today, do I think Georgia will be in the SEC championship game? I would say yes. And just because they lost that game wouldn't necessarily exclude them from the CFP, but they can't afford to lose another game. I don't even know which game I would tell you, but I think there's a, I would probably, if I had to bet it, which I don't, I would take Georgia losing a regular season game. By the way, losing one game is not that bad, okay? Unless you're trying to win the national championship. We'll come back with more after this.